This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 458, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Podcast episode 458. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are two guys this week. There's three of us. Can you imagine?
Yes.
Be quiet for as long as I can.
It's overwhelming.
Hi, Montgomery and Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
We're back as a trio. And it's funny because it was completely unplanned that we would all be off 3 weeks in a row, different pairings.
By the third week, though, it was like, all right, this is okay.
But it was just like random that we all took the week. I had a wedding. Josh had a wedding. Paul had to go kill a guy and then escape for a while.
You're not supposed to. That part is no.
I'll leave that part out.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
We are iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the comic they liked the best, or it was their favorite, or whatever. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that on the podcast along with other books of the week.
You got to pick one.
Don't like it.
You got to pick one. Other topics of interest, other goofiness. The thing is, when you got to pick one, you got to pick one.
You can't come here and go, Josh had the pick of the week, and I just go, eh.
Or, pull old Ron and pick eight of them. You can't go either way. You got to go right down the middle and pick the one.
We don't put up with that shit.
Before we get to the show, quick reminder, no warning, there'll be some spoilers, especially this week, some major things went down, so I'll be spoiling those things for you. If you haven't read your books, pause the show, come back.
Well, it's in the title.
Spoilers?
It's like Death of Wolverine. It's in the title.
Right.
It's a good point.
I thought you had changed the name of the show while I was gone.
No.
Spoiler podcast.
iFanboys, we're going to tell you what's happening. It's in the title. You don't have to say that anymore.
Make a really long title. We should just make the whole opening part of the title.
Josh,
you had the pick.
Yeah, I did. My pick of the week this week was Deadpool's Art of War, number one.
I don't think anyone saw that, including Deadpool.
Deadpool himself.
The Watcher.
Here's how we got to this. I read a not large amount of books this week, and they were sort of the regular books that we talk about and we like, and they were fine. And so I had to sort of dig and like, well, what is it that impressed me that wasn't something that I got other weeks or in other comics that would give us something to talk about, something that I think about, like what was good, and I ended up on this book. It's a mini series written by Peter David. By the way, back strong, working. He has been for a time, but I've been reading that stuff. Drawn by Scott Koblish. You may remember pretty much, and colored by Val Staples. And pretty much every time we talk about one of these Deadpool issues lately, it's one of those strange ones that Scott Koblish draws in another style. And for me, the reason I think I put this here is that, like, it's occurring to me that over the past couple of years, we've been talking about Scott Koblish a lot. And it's never...
He also did OMAC.
Right.
We liked OMAC a lot.
And it's never been for the same thing.
No.
Which...
He's very versatile.
Right. It's really impressive. So this one starts off with... It's like a flashback to Sun Tzu, writer of The Art of War. And he's
is
sort of...
Is that a miniseries or an image?
It's a book from a Chinese general.
Oh.
People have used it.
So it's a manga.
Yeah, exactly. You're supposed to read it backwards. Maybe that's what I did wrong. That's why I lost. Shit. That was the lamest thing I've ever said. So this is like sort of super serious Sun Tzu addressing the camera and telling his story. And the style is all sort of this I don't even, just a classic sort of like an Asian comic book kind of story going on. And then all of a sudden Deadpool shows up and he spears Sun Tzu through the middle, takes his like scrolls and is like, hey, this book's really cool. I should go and take it and sell it. So he shoots back to, they don't explain any of this, by the way. There's no, and I just want to make that clear. And then like
there's
he shows
like no
up.
Time machine, no,
no, there's no
like
reason.
That.
Like there's literally no explanation, which I love. I'm coming around to Deadpool. It must be the case. It's kind of odd.
I would love, you know, let's put the story aside for a second. I would love to get in my own time machine, go back about 5 years and talk to that Josh and be like, listen, in 5 years, you're going to be talking about Deadpool like all the time.
Well, listen, 5 years ago, Josh, that is one different fatter dude. Not much fatter. I don't know.
It's
you
so
tell
weird.
Me.
I mean, it's good.
I just think that. It's one of two things. One part of the snob part of me can say, well, they put better writers on him, and so, which is true, because I am not a Daniel Way fan, so I wasn't touching that stuff with a it didn't matter who was doing it. I wasn't reading it. You know, they put Jerry Duggan and Brian Posehn on, and I liked that. I wanted to try it. Actually, what really did it was Remender on Uncanny X-Force. I was like, oh, I'm enjoying this character that you're writing here like this. So it gives you a taste for it, you know, but who knows? We've all got our prejudices about things and what we've all got stories.
So is this one of those just super silly, like there's no rhyme or reason, it's just
I don't know. I literally don't know anything about it other than what happened. So like he kills Sun Tzu, he finds these scrolls and he's like, I should sell this for $1 million. And so the next scene he's in a publisher's office and he puts
he's really thinking low on that, isn't he?
He's put his sword to her neck. And then I'm going to push through. And then she starts shooting him with a bunch of machine guns that pop out of her desk. I don't know why she has those. She's a publisher of books.
Well, publishing is a tough racket right now.
But she's like, this book's been out for a really long time. Everybody knows you have to put a different spin on it because there's a bunch of them. And he's like, well, how about a survival manual? Like the whole world is at war. And she said, that'd be cool, but the world's not at war. So he says, hang on. And then he goes and he finds Loki. And he tries to incite a war. And this is where it gets interesting to me is that – and I normally do not like to just tell what the whole thing – what everything happened. But he switches his art around. And so when they get to Loki, the first scene we're seeing are like John Buscema kind of Loki.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And there's all these different kind of things. And it kind of morphs into Walt Simonson Thor. Like you flip the page and then you've got like an old Walt Simonson Thor style that he's going through. And then Thor and Loki, it just becomes a big Asgardian battle. That's pretty much the thing. That's what happened.
That's kind of awesome, though.
I know, like I describe it like that, and I'm just you know, listen. I'm not gonna lie. There was a time that I would have required more than that, but in this, I'm like, I don't. It's not wrapped up in anything. I don't have to think about it.
You've also come around to sort of this more wacky.
Oh sure.
Storytelling.
And then you know, really,
sequitur kind of stuff. Yeah.
For me. You know, the story is that, you know, I think it's time we just gave Scott Kobush his due.
Yeah, he's good. He's really good.
I mean, really, it's was super fun to watch the styles change and like the pages that were done in a style, you know, if like you listen to somebody do a cover song, you're like, that sounds kind of good, but it's kind of weird and off. These pages are just actually really good.
Right.
You know,
he can
of their own accord.
He can do many styles. The thing that was great about him on OMAC was that he very much recalled Kirby without it being a ripoff, but it still recalled that Kirby. Yeah. It sounds like in the same way he's recalling Buscema and Simonson and those kind of thing.
Yeah.
And in those 70s flashback dead issues too.
Yeah, exactly.
You had no context for this, and like you weren't familiar with Walt Simonson Thor or anything like that. You'd still, you know, enjoy it and just appreciate it. Like that's great. And
yeah, exactly.
Doing all these juggling all these different styles. I like the coloring on this a lot.
Yeah, Val Staples definitely.
Yeah, really nice and subtle. Like jewel tones and stuff, and really suited the line work in this, yep. which is especially when you flip into those Sun Tzu pages and you get this nice like two-page spread, really like delicate lines and stuff, and so you really don't want to overdo the coloring. There was one spot where there was like a digital sound effect,
mm-hmm.
and it was really kind of glaring because everything else was just so elegant.
Yeah, understated.
And there's just this bold red, you know. Yep. And I was like, but otherwise, I thought it was really beautiful.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And then at the same time, you know, Peter David's no slouch. He's got a
career ahead of him, I think.
Yeah, he knows comic book pacing. He knows the characters. He's funny. It all kind of works, you know. It was just fun stuff. And I wasn't going to read it. Like, I was looking for more to read, and I saw the cover, which is this beautiful sort of faux Eastern, you know, scroll-looking...
Like brushwork.
Yeah, brushy Japanese sort of drawing. And it's a beautiful cover.
A bit of, like, David Mack, like, kabuki kind of stuff.
Well, you know what stands out is the sort of title page. Like, the cover is gorgeous, and the interior, and then there's this, like, horribly bad Photoshop title page they have in here, but besides that, you know, like, it was just at the end, I was like, that was a really fun thing, and it got me thinking. We spend all of this time talking about artists. We've been doing it for years and years now. We'll say, oh, I love this guy's style, and I love you know, like, I like how Capullo draws Batman, I like what Jock does, I basically everybody who works with Scott Snyder, you know, but that becomes a thing, or somebody like Jerome Opeña. And on the other side of the spectrum, I feel like it's a lot harder for a guy who doesn't necessarily have a style, you know, or can do a bunch of different things, which is no less talented, to get recognition. Like, you get buttonholed. We talked about this with Mike Norton forever ago.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I don't know what my style is. And I think he has a style. It doesn't sound like him. He does not sound like that.
Like, a little bit, but not.
Yeah, no, like, I haven't done it in so long that it was just, I was like, whoa, it wasn't there anymore.
But the thing about a guy who doesn't have a style like Koblish, who can do lots of styles, is that he's always working, though.
That's a good point.
He may not be a superstar, and, you know, I'm sure he doesn't command superstar page rates, but he's always working on something because, A, he's old school, he's a pro, he gets books out on time quickly. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he can do your Japanese style. He can do your Bushima style. He can do your Simonson style. He can do your Kirby style. He can do all kinds of stuff. 70s style. Like, he can do it, whatever. So he's always.
It's almost,
like, there's always a book with him coming out.
It's almost like a studio musician. Like, they're people who are not famous. Yeah, it's a session guy, and they're like the best musicians in the world because they can do all those things. But, you know, like Jimmy Page was a session guy before Led Zeppelin. You know, because he could do all those different things, and he then got famous. So it's like. Something could come along later where the session guy, I like that. That's a great term for him. Like, he's a session musician. He's a session comic book artist. And I think that's kind of what he is. Like, you've got to have your shit nailed down, though. You've got to be really good at it. And I think that's what we're seeing. Like, every time one of these issues comes out, I mean, those are ones that in the Deadpool issues, you know, where there was like the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s, that's amazing.
Yep.
And then I really like what they can do with production now. I think it's... I don't ever get sick of people coloring comic books to look like their old comic books. I've never gotten sick of that.
Well, I don't get sick of you picking a pick out of your hat.
Well, some weeks.
It's fun. It's always fun to hear about something new. That,
yeah.
And I would never have expected. I did not, when I logged on this morning, expect to see Deadpool's Art of War number one. But there you go.
Yeah.
Now, Deadly Class number 8 is this week. And this book continues to be... awesomely uncomfortable to read.
Yeah, it's really heavy.
It's not just heavy. It's just so, you know, we've mentioned this before. There's so much of Remender's blood on the page.
It's an open wrist.
It's like a bit of an overshare. Have you been lately? Well, and it just talks, and you're like, oh, I have to. I have to go now.
So that's,
well, it's not just like, have you been lately? It's, have you been all this time?
Yeah, you know? It's true.
But that makes it really great and really compelling and personal. But that aside, this was a really important plot issue in which we find out the secrets of the main character.
Whose name none of us know.
Marcus.
Sure.
Marcus Lopez. So we know he's been on the run from an orphanage fire, and he's been wanted by the police for starting the fire. And a couple issues ago, his current girlfriend's ex attacked them. While he was trying to get with a different girl, And he was X was killed, and then the body was stolen by his former orphanage roommate. And so that's been sort of the back going on behind the scenes in the last couple issues is what happened to the body. And in this issue, the girl that he actually likes finds where the body's, or she found it at the end of the last issue, I think. And she tells him, I know where the body is, and but first I need to know why I'm going to go risk my life attacking these hillbillies in a building to get this dead body back. And so he gives, Marcus gives her his diary, and that's where we find out what actually happened in the orphanage. And this was an amazing issue. First from Wes Craig.
Wes Craig and Lee Lowridge. I think the two of them together.
The sort of monochromatic or...
Yeah, well...
I always screw this up, Paul. The
single color.
Monochromatic flashbacks were really great.
Yeah, it was really nice. And I think that like the first thing I noticed is that, and Lee Lowridge is obviously he's an old pro and he's got no problem knowing when to hold back and knowing when to apply a style. And it totally worked for this. But then also as I'm flipping through it and I look, I'm really digging the sort of really loose, heavy inks that Craig is throwing down here. And if you look,
it almost looks like it's done quickly.
Yeah. And you can all, it's super impressionistic and you can see, you know, there's shots of, like wherever the bully is, you know, like the side of his face is literally just, you can see like it's just a messy paintbrush drawn down in like an S shape on his face. You can see all the strokes. And I don't know if it's digital. It well could be looking at some of it, but it doesn't matter because it works, regardless either way, but it's just super loose and there's not really solids. Like it's not like anybody took a Photoshop action and filled something. They just sort of colored it all in. And I really appreciated that looking at it. And
I think what makes it work is there's these really meticulous layouts because those, you know, that those are, you know, really sort of rigidly kind of plotted of how a page is going to go. And then it's all muscle memory from there, just, you know, and you can just attack it with the brush and everything. And I think my favorite layouts in an ongoing comic right now is just looking at a page. The anatomy of each page is so fascinating, but it doesn't stop you in your tracks. You just, you know, you keep on flowing through it because it's so dynamic and so interesting to look at.
You mentioned, Josh, earlier or a few minutes ago that, you know, everybody that Scott Snyder works with is awesome, and I could
I think you could say
the same for Remender.
You could definitely say this. He's a guy who, like, if
they're
you look,
guys that attract great artists.
Oh well, it's not even just attract because it's. I mean, with Remender at least, I'm sure with Snyder too. But with Remender, it's very much a conscious decision. If you think about it, he brought, you know, a guy like Jerome Opeña into Marvel. He'd never worked for Marvel before, and he shows up and he's fully formed. You know, like it's not like, oh, this new guy, it's just amazing. Like, where'd he come from? And we're all like, well, he's been doing Fear Agent, he's amazing. You know, but he even brought it bigger, and I think. You know, Remender's an artist. He, you know, he was an animator. He's a guy, he can draw and ink and do all that stuff. So he absolutely knows what works and what's good. And for the most part, you know, I think he's been really, obviously, especially on the creator-owned stuff. I mean, you're talking about Mateo Scalera, who needs to fucking stop it over there. You know, he's got him on, he's got Greg Tichini on the other book. I mean... Yeah. It's not even just a feat to get all these guys to work on your books, but just to be able to identify them, you know, like it takes an eye to be able to pick those guys out. And so
also looking at the Wes Craig pages, what's great about it is he gets really super detailed and impressionistic on the flashbacks, but then on the modern stuff, like the girl that Marcus likes but isn't dating, her face has very, very, very few lines in it at all. I mean, there's like, you know, one little dash for the nostril, a little bit for the eye, and that's all you get. So he's,
I don't get that, by the way.
The what?
I don't know. I like the one he has. The other one doesn't do anything for me.
Well, they're both psychopaths, so.
Oh, I know. Well, I mean.
Pick your poison.
What are you going to do? He goes to a psychopath school. But
guys,
I'm just,
what's
aesthetically.
Worse than one Purple Man?
Brady Bunch.
Five little Purple Man kids.
A group of those scary Danny Mumy kids from. Bill Mumy.
Josh, if your son could tell you what to do with his voice and how crazy that would be.
He kind of, well, anyway.
He kind of does. But I think this Purple Man arc has been really great because the idea of these kids with his power, kids who are, you know, Purple Man's a psychopath, but these kids are just all id.
The ultimate, like, power of suggestion.
And so, you know, that's almost in a way worse because they're almost more, they're way more chaotic than Purple Man was. And I think this has been a really fun arc.
I love the way that they're depicted. It's not just like looking at a bunch of like Grimace children. And you know, like how do you depict you know, kids with purple skin without them looking like aliens or something? And it's just sort of like, it kind of looks like they're falling into like a purple light.
Mm-hmm.
Like a light is being cast over their face.
Purple gel.
And it's just a really it's a really interesting effect, and it makes it even creepier.
And once again, we have Mark Waid playing with Daredevil's powers in that he can't see they're purple, so he just thinks they're little kids mm-hmm. who are in trouble, and doesn't realize he's herding them around and they're purple kids.
You're used to Daredevil being, you know, one, two steps ahead of you as a reader, and in this one, you know, you're ahead of him, and you know that they're purple. You're now, screaming at the comic, they're purple, watch out.
Now, was the Purple Man unable to affect Matt previously?
I don't know.
Sounded like they weren't really getting to him on this, but then, like he said, like their ids were so powerful that it was sort of bleeding out.
The only time I remember, you know, Purple Man stories, obviously, was an Alias, and then before that in X-Men, but I don't remember him ever facing off with Daredevil.
Was an early Bendis arc. Like,
was there?
Yeah, that's, or maybe it was Alias.
It was Alias.
It was Alias, wasn't it? Yeah. I feel like he showed up in Daredevil after that.
I don't know. I can't recall, so I don't know. But
it's all a purple haze.
I did like. You're in trouble for that one. I did like Foggy wearing the fat suit.
Yeah, it was funny,
but not having a fat head. So
it was really pretty great. It was like on Community when they're like putting a bunch of T-shirts over top of T-shirts and seeing how many they can stack. It's just a ridiculous disguise. And I like the idea of let's give Matt Murdock a book deal, and he can write, you know, the tell all of what it's like to be Daredevil. And God, that would be a depressing book. All concentrated into, you know, one prose book.
Well, it's a valid worry that you sit down to write your life story. If your life's been pretty goddamn terrible, you might get a little depressed thinking about it. So they're very right to worry about him writing this book. But this was another good issue of Daredevil. Now we have a birth or a rebirth and a death to talk about. The first is the rebirth. So according to Miles Morales, The Ultimate Spider-Man number 6, this is actually Peter Parker who's back alive. Do we believe it?
Yeah. I mean, I do. I got through it, and I actually, you know, like I love these characters, so I like watching them interact with each other, whatever. But it was kind of just, he's back. Here it is. There's no reason for it, and there's an explanation, sort of, and it all works. It's fine. It's not like it's any worse than any other. But it just kind of happened, and I don't know why.
There was two things interesting about this. First is that I thought I would be. If this is indeed him back, I thought I would be more happy about it because we loved that character for 20 years or whatever.
Yes.
But now I'm so fully invested in the Miles Morales story that it was just kind of like I didn't really feel much about it.
Well, I mean, my problem with the death of Peter Parker the first time around was specifically that I was totally into what was going on. I feel like there was a lot of story in front of us, and they just yanked the rug out from under us like they did in The Sopranos a lot, you know? And now they're doing it again by bringing him back. And it's like, you know, you're jerking me around a little bit.
Well, here. I don't think he's going to come back and take over. Miles' name is in the title.
No, I know that. That's fine. But, it still reverberates. It still becomes the story.
It just seemed weird. And, I mean, there's all kinds of rumors flying around about what's going to happen next year mm-hmm. with the Ultimate Universe, as there have been for many years, but these seem to have a lot more credence to them. So I don't know if that's why they brought him back. To give it one last hurrah. I don't know. But
I think that's what makes it all the more jarring is knowing that the sort of the line is kind of in flux, and there have been all these different crossovers between the different realities and everything, and knowing that it's going to come to some kind of a head in the next few months or years, it's hard to latch on to it. I'm enjoying Miles' story, but it's weird thinking about, you know, this might not exist, you know, this or he's going to end up, you know, in
upstairs getting his basketball never to come down again.
Yes.
Happy days joke. Both my hands are up in the air, by the way.
Stupid.
mirror image of that would be Death of Wolverine number 4, in which Wolverine dies, and I didn't feel anything either. Although I thought it was kind of funny, he died similarly to the dude on Game of Thrones with the golden helmet.
Crown for King.
So,
no.
Here in this issue, he should do Aquaman like that. We'll talk about that in a minute. You're gonna get plenty of time for that impression later.
No.
We're gonna scream right past the rebar clause, which thank you everyone on Twitter for pointing it out and sending photos.
Thanks Jesus for thinking Christ, of us.
You guys hate this. Sadist. Here's as many pictures as we can show you.
I liked his
last words though.
So Wolverine goes and finds out that the dude behind trying to kill him was Dr. Cornelius, the original doctor from the Weapon X program, who was way back in the first time we saw the origin in Marvel Comics Presents, the Barry Windsor Smith stuff.
Yeah,
Yukon Cornelius.
And so then he goes there. There's a fight with another dude, and I didn't really, wasn't so much into that. But then liquid adamantium gets poured on Wolverine. I guess it's cool because it didn't melt him. And
he just staggers outside, and then his life flashes before his eyes. And I like the parting words is enough.
And then he's a statue. Down and he's dies. An adamantium statue on his knees. And what's interesting, I mean, partially, I didn't really care, just because of the normal death stuff. Partially, all the behind the scenes politics with the X-Men at Marvel right now. And partially because there's now another miniseries coming out about, Legacy of Logan or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the cover is him in the last panel with all of his, people around him. So I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, this is my least favorite of all the issues. Mm-hmm. Probably because I've never actually read Weapon X, and so I didn't really know. Like, it didn't mean it. Like the reveal of the person didn't really mean anything to me, and it was just kind of a big fight. There was nothing wrong with it. It just didn't really affect me one way or the other, I think.
That was one of those comics as a kid that was, like, a big deal to hunt down.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know that now, but.
And just for me, like, I remember that was one of those books for me. It was like, Wolverine's origins has been told somewhere, mm-hmm. and then spending years tracking those issues down.
Yeah, so I kind of remember.
That's the
that.
Only reason why it really sticks in my head.
I remember not liking it because I didn't like the art. But again, that's when I was a kid. I didn't like good art,
sure.
as we've all experienced to a certain extent or another.
Yeah.
I don't know that I have a ton.
It'll be interesting to see if they actually take them off the table, mm-hmm. like they are doing with other people. That are not owned by Marvel Studios, and how long that lasts.
I mean, from a structure standpoint, having him be ensconced in a bunch of adamantium, that's the correct choice. I mean, that's the way it's got to go, and obviously, you can't get him out, you can't, whatever. But
I wonder if they're going to put him on tour.
like Jonah Hex?
When they have the artifacts from King Tut's tomb, and it goes around to different museums and stuff, and they lend them out. And,
like Trigger?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I do it. Some enterprising entrepreneur in the Marvel Universe should take a little Wolverine tour. Don't you think?
I think that's, yeah. It'll happen. But then he'll be mad, and then revenge. And
if you'd like to buy pewter collectibles... I know he's not ensconced in pewter, but whatever. You can head over to ifanboy.com/Amazon, and we get a little piece of that action. Make it your bookmark, and we can keep the light bulbs on.
Let's see if they have a pewter Wolverine. I bet they do.
Keep talking. Josh will look it up.
Or you can go to ifanboy.com/registration, where for $3 a month or $30 a year, you make us very happy. Keep the podcast going. Keep the old database in line. I don't know.
Yeah, there is.
Hey, there is.
I don't know. The back catalog of yes. wonderful episodes that you
we still have to call Ron here. About that. There's a problem with the database.
Yeah.
is it a database?
People are like, you're a professional podcaster. You've been doing this for really long. How does it work? I don't know. I go on Skype. I make talk. So
it works.
We've got the Marvel Wolverine pewter key ring. Which is his head, which actually is a companion piece to my pewter Thor hammer, which I p- Pewter Thorhammer was my roommate in sophomore year of college. Pewter Thorhammer was a
big Norse
computer sci major. Yeah. That he also played. He played
Civilization all the time.
Yeah. No, I was gonna say mandolin.
There was a guy in my dorm group freshman year who got kicked out of school because all he did was play Civilization all the time.
My freshman year roommate had a problem with SimCity.
Like a big problem. SimCity's awesome.
Well, you know when we had a problem with World of Warcraft. That was a long time ago. So there's the Pewter Thorhammer. Pewter Thorhammer, and then there's a little limited edition pewter statue.
You don't use that name for something, you're a failure.
It's a pretty fantastic name. That's true.
What the hell is Edge of Spider-Verse number 5, and how is it at number 5?
It's a rough title.
Number 5? They're these fun little one-shots leading up to that Spider-Verse event. And so that's where Gwen Stacy's Spider-Woman came from, and she's getting her own series now.
These like alternate universe things.
Yeah. And I would like to see more of this. This is Gerard Way and Jake Wyatt, and it's got some mecha in it. So I've been looking forward to this one. Little tributes and homages, pretty blatant to Ghost in the Shell characters. There's an Akira jacket in there. And the mech itself looks like the AVA units from Neon Genesis Evangelion. So this was, I was, I don't know.
Did you catch any? Did you catch any of what he just said, Connor?
I heard mecha, so I was just going to focus on
okay,
that.
Okay, yeah.
So if a mecha Batman fought a mecha Spider-Man, Paul, who would win?
I think this Spider-Man one would win. I think it's bigger. Anyways.
Davis McAllary. He was on Treme.
It's piloted by a young girl, I guess like a teenage girl, who is the daughter of the Peter Parker of this universe. And she's a Japanese schoolgirl. And she teams up with a sentient radioactive spider, and they pilot the thing together. And there's like a manga version of Daredevil in it because Gerard Way wanted to do that. So... and they have nice adventures. And then Spider-Ham shows up.
Awesome.
It's not the most satisfying beginning, middle, and end kind of story because it just sort of rolls into the Spider-Verse thing saying, oh, there's multiple realities and we all need to help because there's this big cataclysm coming. And so it doesn't really – it's more of a like a concept than a fully fleshed out story. But what's there, it's kind of a cool – proof of concept for if they wanted to do a mini or something. And the Jake Wyatt art is really cool. So I had fun with it.
Paul, did you feel like, you can tell me I'm crazy. You can feel free to do that. That okay. Wild Zen number 2, even though the artist was the same, the art looked different. I thought it wasn't as tight.
I think I'd agree with that.
I felt like the expressions on the characters weren't as strong. I felt like there's a lot of emotion in the first issue in those.
It wasn't as polished, but I still thought it looked gorgeous.
No, I think it looked good, but I just thought it wasn't as impactful as the first one, which I was just mesmerized by the art of the first one.
So this is that Wind in the Willows meets War of the Worlds thing that I was head over heels for, and I continue to love it. It's still deliberately paced, but we get some alien action.
It means your character gets fried by the alien.
I love this Clive Slipaway character, the dog. He's just kind of very he's a dog of few words. And so they get to the house where that lady pig was.
Did anybody else think that perhaps the house fire smelled awesome? Was that morbid?
I forgot to read this, so I'm trying not to listen.
It was Lady Pig that was
burned in her house.
I thought That's sad.
But then Clive walks up and they're like, what's that smell? He's like, crackling.
Crackling?
This was good. We introduced a new character, the agoraphobic recluse writer lady who's a cat.
Susan Perdue.
Yeah.
Two great names.
Would you like a related Civil War story?
Sure. Yes.
When Joe Johnston abandoned the line at Bull Run... For the Confederates, he tried to give away as much of their stores as possible because they didn't want it falling into Union hands, and so they gave the local people as much as they could carry away, but they were still left with a hundred thousands of tons of pounds of bacon, and so they just lit it on fire.
What?
And so, because the people couldn't carry all that bacon back, so there was just this huge pile of bacon that they had burned, and they were like, and the people in the area didn't forget that smell because that winter there was no food. So they had just burned the, but can you just imagine like 100,000 pounds of bacon? I know, but it would be amazing. I will have, I'm guessing, a lot of Civil War factoids in the coming months.
Superior Foes of Spider-Man 16, is the, this was the final issue.
This, yeah, no? it definitely, I can't imagine it wouldn't be, because it was.
It's the weirdest ending.
It was very strange.
It was very strange, but I kind of liked it.
There were two sequences in here that I was particularly tickled by. One of them, I actually like sort of copied it and pasted it on Twitter just because, and it was the, it was Mach 4, 7, whatever seven, he is now. He forgot his phone in the coffee shop, and it's a 16 panel grid. Some of them are doubled, and he tried to call Iron Man, and he sort of gave him the brush off. And in the next page, like, he walks out, and a woman tries to give him his phone, and there's no dialogue, and he goes to turn around, and he whacks a blind man in the face with his wings, and then just like sort of makes that face and flies straight away. It was gorgeous. It was just a wonderful little sequence. And then the other thing was that they. Do you know what I'm going to say? I probably know. They painted the head of Silvio Silvermane like Paul Stanley, and they said, "Quiet, Star Child." And every time I looked at the kiss face on Silv, I would laugh. I'm still laughing now. I loved this series. This was really a special, great, wonderful thing, I think.
It's so out there, and it's like kind of like following along with it. It feels like you're in on a really good joke, and
yep.
Everyone else is missing out. That's what it feels like.
Great, just great cartooning, man. You know, it was like really, I really love the work that they did. You know, Steve Lieber is an underrated master. He's another one of those guys that we talk about. He can kind of do anything, but you know, ever since we saw him in Whiteout years ago, like, he's so good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did a sketch for me at a show once, and like was like he Ooh, used he yeah you totally and I've never forgotten that, and he's like, he's a master. He's just one of those guys who's real, real good. And
he used a brush. He had some speckling with the Whiteout.
Yep,
it was good. Now I had forgotten about Vale.
I kind of had too. I feel like it's been a little while. It's better now, at least I think. Like, at first I wasn't sure about it, but I don't want to give up on a Greg Rucka book. It. Yeah. She's a demon, basically. And somebody, there was a convocation to get her that's worse than whatever we said before.
Emails.
It was a joke.
It was Connor at ifanboy.com.
Right,
I know.
Fine.
All the comic book characters you meant.
Yes, that's what I meant.
You know, it's interesting for the fact that it's Greg Rucka. I want to see what he does. Like, I won't give up, basically. I don't love the art still, but it's kind of interesting is that, like, basically she was a captured demon, and whatever the jerky John Constantine of their world had sort of captured, and her shining white knight, that, you know, that other dude who was just nice to her, came and rescued her, and you know, they tried to convince her, like, she's a demon. If you let her go and give her free will, that's going to be bad for everybody, and he still did it. So now we're going to see what happens with their relationship. It's kind of interesting.
I wanted to very briefly mention Batman Eternal 28, which is a book. I'm not even getting into it, other than the fact that they have some really interesting artists on it. We've talked in the past about new names we haven't recognized drawing this book that have been unusual for DC or for the New 52 at least. And this was another one, not necessarily unusual, but this was an artist I'd never heard of before called Megan Hetrick. Mm-hmm. Megan Hetrick. And she reminds me of sort of an early, slightly more cartoony Ryan Stegman. And I was really impressed with that. Like, I haven't been loving this book, I've mentioned before, but whenever there's an interesting artist on, I always, you know, catches my eye more, you know, that issue catches my eye more than the other ones. And this was really fun art. So I think she's a name to watch out for. Megan Hetrick. Really good.
You sure it's not Ryan Stegman with like a mop head?
Maybe.
Like as a wig.
I thought it sort of fit into that sort of style of the new Batgirl book and the Gotham Academy. It's sort of more cartoony, you know, female friendly in that the women aren't all like, you know, crazily busty and all that stuff. You know, look sort of cartoony and realistic and fun.
Cool things happening at the bad offices.
I think so.
They're doing some interesting things.
So those are the books we're going to talk about this week. Go to fanboy.com. You can find the post for this show. That's where you can talk about these books, other books we didn't get to talk about, other books you won't think we should check out, anything you want to talk about from this week's comics. You can find that at ifanboy.com. And this week, DC Comics or DC Entertainment, or actually Warner Brothers, to be more honest about it, at the at their quarterly investors meeting, dropped their big news about they're really going to take this comic book thing to the edge.
Sure.
This comic book movie thing. How far can we take this before the bubble bursts? And they've announced 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 movies coming out over the next 5 years, which is pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm.
What was interesting, and we'll just list them off real quick in case you didn't hear the news. So everyone knows about Batman v Superman. I almost said Versus, but clearly it's V. It's right there in the script.
Yeah,
Batman
obviously.
Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, directed by Zack Snyder. That's 2016. Also 2016, this was a big surprise one, and I'm going to circle back to this one in a minute. Suicide Squad, directed by David Ayer, also 2016. And then the following year, Wonder Woman, starring Gal Gadot, who's in the Batman Superman movie, and also Justice League Part 1, directed by Zack Snyder, with all the actors in the current roles reprising their characters. And then 2018, you have The Flash, starring Ezra Miller, Aquaman, starring Jason Momoa. 2019, Shazam. 2019, also Justice League Part 2, also directed by Zack Snyder. And then in 2020, Cyborg, starring Ray Fisher, and a reboot of Green Lantern in 2020. And what was your guys' initial reaction to this?
We'll all be 6 years older.
God, I don't want to.
My initial reaction is that, given their history, that's pretty optimistic.
Pretty audacious, right?
I don't believe it will happen.
The definition of ducks in a row.
Yeah, but like everything they've ever done has been pushed back for years because they were done by committee.
Right.
Batman, Superman got pushed back a year, like everything. And so, like, the fact that they got the one Superman movie out, if you want to call it a Superman movie, you know.
How many years ago was that? And Marvel's pushing out two. I mean, they're putting themselves on the Marvel schedule basically now. But
and then the second thought I had was that like, you really like this Zack Snyder thing a lot that much? Really?
Giving the keys to all of it. I mean, they're really banking on Batman Superman being a huge success because all of these characters come out of that movie. Mm-hmm. Unlike the Marvel method, which is do the characters first and then bring them together, this is the opposite. And are we saying that people want to go see a Cyborg movie?
Well, I mean, that
2020 will all be cyborgs.
That on its own,
it'll just be a slice of life kind of film.
That on its own, you know, like who would have wanted to see a Guardians movie, you know, 2 years ago? So that on its own isn't really a thing.
By that point, Marvel had
yeah, I know.
Jay for it. I mean, that's pretty much the brand. I think it's more analogous to Iron Man, which people didn't go because of the character; they went because Downey Jr. was awesome in the trailer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you know, Iron Man was as much of an unknown character back to the general public as Cyborg is now, and it's just, you know, that's just the most glaring one. I can pick out Aquaman or Shazam or any of the other ones.
Yeah, sure.
You're like, are you really saying people are going to turn out for that? I mean, they're really going to have to love these
The
movies.
Fact is, if these first two shit the bed, that's it. You're not going to see more, I think.
You'll see a pair down. I think you'll do Justice League. I think there's no way. It's just, it'll take so long to...
Yeah, I'd be amazed if they kept 50% of the schedule.
Now, here's the interesting one, Suicide Squad, because David Ayer is actually a really awesome filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his new film Fury is out today, the World War II movie with Brad Pitt. And he did, I think...
Does he play his character from Inglourious Basterds? Because if not, no. I don't care.
It looks freaking awesome.
We will be cruel to the German.
Basically, but with a tank. And
all right, I'll go.
And so there, that's...
Under our knives!
The one thing about Marvel is that they've really got great filmmakers to do these things. So if you got a guy like that, and then also today, the day we were recording this, they announced that they're going to try to go A-list crime caper on this, and they're already talking to Will Smith, and they're talking to Tom Hardy, and they're talking to the girl from Wolf of Wall Street
mm-hmm.
to be the Suicide Squad. And that's to me is a really interesting direction to go.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, on paper that makes, you know, it's one of those things where it could go really wrong really fast. On paper, that doesn't sound a lot different than when they did League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Like, just like Sean Connery's in it. Cool, you know, but like it can still be.
No, but you're talking about a really quality filmmaker.
I know, but you know, it's like at the end of the day, like, do they want to do something that, are they trying to find a way to utilize their property in any way possible? Or, you know, like, let's put some stars in it and put a thing together. Or are they trying to make something, you know, of quality? I mean, the one thing I think you can say about Zack Snyder is if you agree with him, if you like what he did or not, at least he does bring a certain auteurship to it. He brings his style. So they sort of, and he's doing all these, so there's going to be a through line in that way, which is, I don't necessarily like that specific creative choice, but I think that that's a good thing to do in general. The mm-hmm. way that they let, you know, they let Joss Whedon do his style. They let, the Guardians guy, whose name is gone right
Jim
now.
Jim Gunn.
Yeah, like they let him do his thing. So that's cool. It's just they're going for a different tone altogether, I guess.
Well, yeah, they're going for the grittier tone,
yeah.
Which is what they've decided they want to do. Really bizarre. I mean, obviously you can see who's going to be in Batman v Superman by the announcement of the casting. So you know that Cyborg, Flash, Aquaman, and obviously Wonder Woman, we know that. But those three are going to be in it because they announced that in,
you know,
in 6 years, this guy's going to be playing Cyborg.
You know, to kids, though, to kids, Cyborg is not an unknown character in the same way that the Green Lantern wasn't.
Clearly, they're going to be in that movie because they announced him as starring in these things.
Yeah, no, I know. I think that's interesting. But like, people are like, Cyborg, what's that? Like, any kid who watches Teen Titans Go or whatever, they all know who Cyborg is. So that's not a problem. In the same way that they know who Jon Stewart is. They know who Hal Jordan was.
I bet you it's going to be Jon Stewart, Green Lantern.
Oh, it damn well better be. I think that's a much better choice because...
Although Geoff Johns is in charge, so it could be Hal Jordan.
Could be anything. It's probably not going to be Kyle Rayner.
It's very interesting.
Ron Mars is like, please let it be Kyle Rayner.
Ezra Miller is been cast as The Flash. He's a really fantastic actor. He's not someone I at all see as a superhero.
That was such a weird...
Head scratcher?
I don't know who that is, but I also saw like an article today, like, is it okay that The Flash is a gay actor? And I was like, who gives a shit?
I think he's a great actor, really. I never would have put those two together.
That's a good choice.
He's a fantastic actor. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but that's the thing, though. So if you're looking at this, you know, we're not the right people to pitch the movie to, though. But, you know, we all sort of were like, we don't really like the tone that they went with their Superman. Superman himself, the character, the actor, he was fine. But, like, everything he did with it didn't feel like Superman. So then you've got several examples of this kind of thing where, like, that's kind of weird. If you look at Ezra Miller or I don't know what I feel about with Jason Momoa. Like, I don't know how. Maybe, but it's weird.
I think that's the most interesting choice that they've made so far. I mean, the Ezra Miller thing is that's really interesting. But this one, it just seems like a really inspired choice. And
just
looking at the guy and looking at his past roles, it points to that Howard Porter direction, the Grant Morrison JLA.
It does.
Surly, bearded Aquaman.
I know, but I know this is totally lame, but like every version of him is like super white blonde guy. And so it's a very different sort of, like visually, at the very least, it's going to be a very, very different take.
I think it's interesting. Conan.
That's smart.
Yeah, Conan.
Yeah.
With Rocky style.
But that movie was supposed to be terrible. I think I watched the beginning of it.
No, I'm
it
just
was
saying
terrible.
As that physicality of Aquaman.
No.
Like a barbarian king underwater than.
Yeah. Very different than the comic book version of it. I'll tell you one of the, I don't know if it's a rumor, but I've been seeing it around, is the idea that they're going to make Robin either female or specifically Carrie Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
I really love that idea.
It would make sense because, I mean, Zack Snyder said at Comic-Con he's sort of doing his Dark Knight Returns without doing Dark Knight Returns. So
it makes
sense to do that.
Yeah. Well, one thing that guy can do is take somebody else's book and do it exactly without adding anything.
Oh, the rumor was Jenna Malone.
Yeah,
I looked it up. She's really 30. I mean, you know, it's your teenage sidekick starting to get lower back pains.
Well,
I guess
they're doing a Batman who's retired. So
I know, but that was the whole point: is that like Batman is old and the kid is hopping all over the place, and he's like, ugh. I mean, that's how Gary Kelly worked. I'm not saying they need to do that, but that's, you know, and I like that juxtaposition. Although I like it when she came back in The Dark Knight Strikes Again and she was more of a veteran. That was kind of cool.
Sorry, and what?
It's a fine book and it's not my fault that you can't appreciate it.
I don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. I think this all hinges whether this happens or not beyond I think you're obviously going to get Batman v Superman. You're obviously going to get Suicide Squad because they're going to be made at the same time. I think for sure you're going to get Wonder Woman because they built up the whole thing by actually doing a Wonder Woman movie. And I think you'll get Justice League. I think those are the only ones you'll get for sure. And the rest of them will all depend on what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, because also just the way, the amount of time it takes for pre-production and all that stuff, those movies are going to have to be actively worked on.
Yeah.
When Batman v Superman comes out, Justice League they'll be working on actively. So I think we'll at least get those. Whether or not we'll actually ever get a Flash movie or Shazam or Cyborg or Aquaman or a new Green Lantern, it'll be up to those films, I think.
Are we going to care in 6 years?
Totally.
No, you will.
Your kids will.
I fucking wish. Because you won't watch movies now. I'll just be thinking, how am I going to pay for college? That's all I'll be thinking then.
Just tell them there's no college. I sent you that article about German college, Josh.
Yeah, that's true.
German. It's free.
I would have done that.
So we'll see. The DC movie slate is going to be crowded. And then when you add these in with all the Marvel movies and then all the Sony movies and all the Fox movies, it's a lot. It's a lot of movies.
We have signed you up for free university. Here's your coat. First.
Listen, he'll come back a changed man.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of movies, Paul.
My wife's a little nervous, you know. Final Germany.
Thoughts. I'm just trying to imagine a Zack Snyder Shazam. That just sounds like a disaster to me. But
so, Paul, the only way they can win you back is if in this new movie, it's they recognize that Superman was a dick in the first one, and that's the whole point of it.
I think the Justice League movie is going to be about them just like destroying the entire planet, and then part two is them looking for another planet for humans to live on.
So this is a Justice Lords movie.
Yeah.
Which they then
I'm going to try to, you know, I'm going to look at it in an open mind, but I think it's fair.
Is it an Interstellar prequel?
Yeah.
And then they destroy that other place just accidentally, really. Like they're like, hey, we can put bowling here.
You think it's fair what?
I think it's fair to look at the pedigree and like the architect that they've chosen for the slew movie. I think that's the weird, bittersweet thing. Like, oh man, they're finally going to do a Wonder Woman movie. Oh man, they're finally going to do, you know, an Aquaman and a Flash movie. And it's these guys doing it.
Right. Well,
yeah, I mean,
it's like your one shot, like, you know, for this generation, you know. And so it's like you win this a dream home that you get to design and, you know, unlimited budget, but it's got to be in North Korea.
Well, that's quite.
I have no jokes about North Korea.
Okay.
Sorry. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm curious what everybody thinks, what they're excited for, what they're not excited for.
I just don't. I think the thing is that. The thing that from Iron Man on, the thing that everybody loved about the Marvel movies is just sort of their optimistic humor.
Yep.
And light tone. So it's a fun. You know that they didn't have that. It's the opposite. It's like, listen, whatever they all liked in 1987, we're gonna bottle that one more time over 10 movies, and that is. That's a lot of grim. And like, the jokes are going to still be in it, but it'll have a different feel.
It's interesting when you contrast that to the DC TV shows,
mm-hmm.
which are not like that at all.
Well, then maybe there's
especially hope. Especially The Flash, which has so much heart to it.
Yeah. I mean, even Arrow. Arrow's more of a darker show, but it's still pretty.
It's still at the core of it, you know.
There are great characters, and there's jokes. And, I mean, it's just such a different tone, and it's going to be really interesting to see the contrast, especially if Flash is still going on the air in 2 years or 3 years when there's a movie out. Really interesting. So those are the DC announcements. We're out of time for emails and voicemails, but you can call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS-326-2697. You can write us at contact@ifanboy.com and tell us where you are and who you are and all those. How you doing? Tell us how you doing.
How you doing?
How you doing?
You doing okay? Doing all right? You've been fine?
So you know? We had the Flash podcast recently, and mm-hmm. coming in 1 week or 2 weeks, no, 1 week will be Constantine podcast. So Paul and I will be discussing the Constantine pilot. Josh,
I can't do it.
Paul and I will be discussing this.
I watched it, but it didn't.
Don't say anything.
No, it didn't. Like I was like, It's a TV show.
So Paul and I will talk about that. That'll be coming out the day it premieres in the United States, which is October 24th. So you can look for that on iFanboy.com and all your podcast locations. And as I said before, head over to iFanboy.com. You can find this show's post, all these special edition shows posts, all the things we've done for the last 13. Well, no, that's not true. It only goes back to 2003, Josh, I think.
Yes.
The last 11 years. Mm. Whenever the first Hulk came out, that was the night the server died. I remember that distinctly because I was at the movies with Ron.
Huh.
Since 2003, you can go back and find all of our content at iFanboy.com.
Well, then sure. You could go ahead and you could follow iFanboy at twitter.com/iFanboy or facebook.com/... Facebook.com/iFanboy. And if you were doing that, then you would know what the pick of the week was ahead of time, and you could check into if it was the thing that you wanted to read, because we'll let you know you about
could,
that.
You could joined in on the... What?
Yeah, we retweet some stuff from time to time, and occasionally people. That's where people go to tell us about Rebar. That's all anybody wants to do now.
It's a Rebar aggregator.
Yeah, they're like, you guys hate this, right? Look at it. Look
Here's
at
some
it.
More Rebar news. Here's someone that was impaled while they were driving.
Yeah, I think it's funny that that's the subculture we've engendered. You can also follow us individually at CS Kilpatrick, at Fuzzy Typewriter, and at J.A. Flanagan for whatever nonsense we are talking about.
Finally, if you dig this sort of thing, you can write us a review in iTunes, or better yet, you can tell all your friends about us, tell your pets.
I did. He didn't care.
Maybe have alpacas. Let them know. It'd be soothing to them. His glossier coat.
Josh, you remember the end of Young Guns?
In Pals. Which,
Pals was scraped onto Billy the Kid's stone marker.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, when you die, I'm going to stick a piece of rebar right in the... I'm going to drop it from a height so it makes that sound.
Go
right into the stone, right into your headstone.
It'll go right through me. So you think you're going to outlive me, is what you're saying.
Well...
No, what's that mean?
I don't know.
You're a big man. Your parts will wear out faster.
Maybe. I got less stress.
Well...
You're going to be like Jefferson and Adams.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think that's actually totally what's going
to
happen.
So, Paul, you're going to have to, the rebar job will have to fall to you.
Who does that, what does that make, who does that make Paul?
Well, Paul actually is Addison. Jefferson.
Paul's Jefferson?
Kind of.
I don't think so. He's not a gigantic hypocrite.
No, but I'm not saying exactly. But he's sort of the genius writer who likes to be by himself and write.
Right, right.
There you go.
Not a slave owner, though, right?
No.
Okay, good.
That wasn't what you were taking care of?
That was a bit of a pause on that.
I just found out these were illegal.
It's okay, they're children.
This is inappropriate joke week on iFanboy.
Yeah.
So,
I said something about not liking Jefferson once, and people got mad at me on social networks. I remember that. I stand by it, though.
You're a jerk. Is.
Josh is really into a U.S. history lately. Yeah, yeah, that's true. Because I can't deal with the news today. That's a thing.
All right, until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I am your host, Joshua Flanagan.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.